just as a person not inclined to die must nonetheless give up his longevity, opulence, fame, and everything else at the time of death, so at the appointed time of victory, one can gain all these when the Supreme Lord awards them by His mercy. Purport. It is not good to be falsely puffed up, saying that by one's own effort one has become opulent, learned, beautiful, and so on. All such good fortune is achieved through the mercy of the Lord. From another point of view, no one wants to die, and no one wants to be poor or ugly. Therefore, why does the living entity, against his will, receive such unwanted troubles? It is due to the mercy or chastisement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that one gains or loses everything material. No one is independent. Everyone is dependent on the mercy or chastisement of the Supreme Lord. There is a common saying in Bengal that the Lord has 10 hands. This means that He has control everywhere, in the 8 directions and up and down. If He wants to take everything away from us with His 10 hands, we cannot protect anything with our 2 hands. Similarly, if He wants to bestow benedictions upon us with His 10 hands, we cannot factually receive them all with our 2 hands. In other words, the benedictions exceed our ambitions. The conclusion is, though, that even though we do not wish to be separated from our possessions, sometimes the Lord forcibly takes them from us, and sometimes He showers such benedictions upon us that we are unable to receive them all. Therefore, either in opulence or in distress, we are not independent. Everything is dependent on the sweet will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's an amusing saying that Srila Prabhupada quotes here, that God has 10 hands, so if He wants to take away from you, how can you resist Him with your 2 hands? Of course, even God's 1 hand is much more powerful than our 2 hands. Sarvatah Parni Padam Tat, His hands and legs are everywhere. How many hands does God have? Yeah, unlimited. And even without hands, He's independent. He's not dependent on hands to take anything away from us. He has 2 hands. You said God has 2. You have unlimited hands. I thought He had 2 hands. So which is correct? Does He have 2 hands or an unlimited number of hands? Unlimited. Both are correct. How is that possible? How is it possible? If you have 2 hands, you have 2 hands. If you have unlimited, you have unlimited. 2 does not equal infinity. Which school did you go to? What kind of arithmetic is this? 2 equals infinity. Dvibhuja Muralidhar. Dvibhuja Shamasan. He has 2 hands, he has unlimited hands. So, doesn't make sense. Inconceivable. Well, it's inconceivable means we can't understand how it's possible, but we should understand that it is possible for Krishna, because everything's possible for Him. So that's the meaning of achintya. It doesn't mean that it's completely beyond the power of thinking about in any way whatsoever, but it defies ordinary logic. Krishna has 2 hands. He has 4 hands. Sometimes He shows... 4 hands is very well known. Even that name Chaturbhuj, 4-handed, that's more common than Dvibhuja. It's a common name, Chaturbhuj. That's a common name. Well, not very common, but some people in India, they have that name. But we don't find people with the name Dvibhuj, because that's considered very ordinary. Everyone has 2 hands, so what's so special about having 2 hands? But if you have 4 hands, that's something very special. So Krishna has, in His Narayan form, has 4 hands. And then there's His Sharabhuj, Gauranga. 604. Then we find in front of Daksha he had Ashtabhuj, 8 arm form. 10 hands, usually we hear of Durga actually with 10 hands, but Srila Prabhupada describes here that the 10 hands, that's figurative to indicate that the principal directions are, his hands are everywhere, in the principal directions. I mean, how many directions are there? It's also unlimited. But there are 10 principles directions. Well, there are the 4 cardinal directions, north, west, east, south, and then 4 in between them, northeast, southeast, southwest, northwest, and up and down. So these are the principal directions. And then he has unlimited hands. He can. Krishna has 2 hands, not always. Sometimes Krishna himself shows 4 hands. For instance, when Draupadi and Bhima were arguing over whether to kill or not kill Ashwatthama for his offense of killing the sons of Draupadi and many others also, Krishna got another 2 hands. So Prabhupada says he discovered another 2 hands. That's the word he uses. So the idea is that with 2 hands he's holding Bhima back on one side and Draupadi on the other. Like that. Also, when Krishna, on the back of Garuda, he came to attack the city of Pragjyotishapur, which is identified with modern Tezpur in Assam. Then he came with Satyabhama. She came out for an outing with him. Usually you don't take your wife when you go to fight, but she came. She's a strong-spirited woman. So at that time also, Krishna on the back of Garuda had 4 hands. He showed 4 hands. So sometimes he's mostly with 2 hands. Sometimes he shows 4 hands. And sometimes more, according to need. But generally 2 hands, very ordinary. They may think, how he's gone. That Brahma, he also thought, can you all sit like this? If you remember in the Nectar of Devotion, it's stated that one shouldn't hold one's knees in the temple before the deity. So I have to practice. In modern life, everyone sits on chairs, so they can't sit cross-legged. Brahma, he was also bewildered seeing Krishna with 2 hands. His father is Narayana. So, a very big form, Garbho Dakshai Vishnu. So, Brahma called for Narayan to appear, and it seemed that Krishna had appeared. It seemed that Narayan had appeared to Devaki and Vasudeva, because he first of all showed a four-armed form when he appeared in the jail. There was a four-armed baby. You might think it's... Nowadays, if a four-armed baby was born, you might think it's some deformity. It might happen. Sometimes children are born with extra limbs. Quite often snakes are born with 2 heads. Still, that happened. I've seen in Gopi Balapur, I saw a photo, I didn't see a live one, but of a snake with 2 heads. And, of course, Ananta Dev, he has many, many heads. Kaliya had so many. So if a child is born with 4 hands, you might think that's some deformity. But Krishna was born with 4 hands just to show he's Narayan, but then later he hid those 2 hands again. So Krishna, he was Narayan, Brahma thought. But later he got some doubt because he saw, what kind of God is this? He's just running around in some fields with some boys and cows. What kind of... I don't think that's God. He should be magnificent, huge. with four hands, not just running around in some field. So even Brahma, he got bewildered. Anyway, the subject of this verse is not hands. The subject is not even directly Krishna. Although in the Bhagavatam the only subject is Krishna. But the subject is philosophy. It's similar to Bhagavad Gita philosophy. That we get what we deserve as we deserve it, when we deserve it, according to the grace of the Lord. We are not the controller, we are not independent. When it's time for us to get all desirable things, those things will come. When it's time for us to be in an undesirable position, that will come. So we see that. It's very common that someone, they're in a very prominent position and all of a sudden they're just nowhere. Just like there was this head of state in Egypt, what was his name, Mubarak. So he was for decades the despotic or... Anyway, that's a subjective outlook, but he was the dictator, that's for sure. He was the dictator of a large country, large population. What's the population of Egypt? About 80 million, something like that. I'm not sure exactly. Anyway, it's a large population. And all of a sudden, he was kicked out. Tried to hold on for a little time, kicked out. And then someone else may come up. Someone has to take charge of the country, sooner or later. So someone who was unknown, they suddenly become some very powerful person. So, all like that, all this. Lifespan, opulence, fame, power, all the various benedictions, one may get them by the grace of the Lord, and they may be taken away also. So, an intelligent person is not puffed up, the term Prabhupada used here. He always used this term, puffed up. Generally people say, now I see, now I'm very powerful, big position, lots of money, and they become proud, thinking, just see, I'm so great. And when bad things happen, they don't think, I'm so useless, they think it's all God's fault. Blame it on God. Jato dosh, nanda gosh. Anything goes wrong, blame it on someone else. Blame it on Krishna. If anything good happens, I did it. Anything bad happens, you say, oh, God's not fair to me. What is he doing? He doesn't understand what an important person I am. He should make everything nice for me. This is the common misunderstanding. All so-called religions of the world, they run on this misunderstanding that God is supposed to scratch our back, shine our shoes, and make everything nice for us. That's God's job. And we can go to a church sometimes and sing some songs or whatever, but we don't know much about him, we don't want to know much about him, and even in some religious system they say you cannot know. Even to want to know is wrong. But our outlook is different. We want to be with that Dvibhuja Muralidhar, that two-handed holder of the flute, who holds not only the flute, but he holds everything. He holds everything. He is the support of everything. Adhara Shaktim Avalambya Parang Swamurti. With his Adhara Shakti. by his Adhara Shakti, that means the power to hold everything. He holds everything in place. Prabhupada said this law of gravity, he said that's all bogus. Balaram's holding everything in place. Now their law of gravity has some problem. They can't work it out how it works. So now they've postulated that most of the universe is full of unseen matter, because otherwise how can there be gravity? So their idea is that gravity is formed by bodies, various bodies, matter attracts matter, but they can't. There's not enough matter that they can see in the universe to uphold their theory. So they've postulated that most of the universe is full of dark matter that you can't see. It's a massive speculation. But Prabhupada said, there's no such thing as gravity. It's all Adhara Shakti. It's the potency of the Lord that holds everything in place. Of course, that's not to say that it can't be explained in scientific terms, but it would seem that a much better postulate for the scientists is to try and think of some other theory than trying to think that most of the universe is full of unseen matter. I mean, it's a massive speculation. It would seem to... A better speculation would be to say, well, we got our theory wrong. They'll get through to that after some time. They'll have some massive breakthrough in science. It happens from time to time when they find out that whatever they thought previously was wrong, and now we got it right. And they go on for a little more time. And then they find there's some more. They do some more calculations and they find, whoops, there's problems with this theory. And then they make up some new speculation, and then some genius comes along and finds out that, well, actually you got it all wrong and now we got it right, and this is called science. See, how could Prabhupada say there's no such thing as gravity? It seems to defy everything that everyone in the world says. Well, that's true. It does. It defies everything in the... Because they got it all wrong. You see, Prabhupada, he got it right. He knows. Sasaravavid, one who knows Krishna, knows everything. Yomam eva samudho janati purushottamam sasaravavid bhajati mam sarvabhavena bharata. One who knows me, Krishna says, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without doubting, without being bewildered, without being confused. Such a person knows everything, and therefore he worships me in all respects. Now you may say, well, how can you know everything? How many hairs were on your head before you shaved it? There's still the hair follicles are there. How many windows were there in the World Trade Center, building number one, before Al-Qaeda blew it up? We know that for a fact, right? It was Bin Laden. It was him who blew it up, right? That's all proved, right? Everyone knows. Maybe. We don't know. Anyway, how can you say that a jiva who is by nature, by his constitution, limited, how can he know everything? So, what does this mean? He knows everything. One who knows Krishna knows everything means he knows what needs to be known. It doesn't mean he's going to win some quiz on TV. Kanbanega Kropati, they have in India, famous one. Who will become a Kropati? Kropati means... How much is a crore? It's not even that much money, is it? 400? Huh? Yeah, 10 million rupees. How much does it work out in dollars? That's what I meant. I know it's 10. I know what a crore means. Okay. Yeah, it's not that much money, actually. $200,000. Well, it's more than most people earn. But in India it goes further, because things are still cheaper, mostly. Although some things are more expensive. Anyway, It doesn't mean that you know everything, but it means that you know the basic principle of everything. Early in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, what is that? Jnana vijnana gatavyam avashishyate. How does that verse go? That, I can't remember. Tired. Anyway, it ends with the, I will now explain to you everything, both noumenal and phenomenal. How does that begin? Jnana vijnana. No, I can't remember. Anyway, but he says, you will learn everything, gyatavyam, everything that's worth knowing. So you don't really need to know how many atoms are in this room. Even if there isn't, what is an atom anyway? What in modern science is called an atom, it's not what in Vedic science is called paramanu. Even what they call an atom is not an atom. The atom means the smallest thing. That's the meaning of the word. But then they found there's more things inside it, more things and more things like that. Anyway, we don't need to know that. It doesn't serve any purpose whatsoever to know that. Jnanam teham savijnanam midam vaksham yasheshataha yaj gyat vabhuhaneho nyaj gyatavyam avashishate. That's the verse. Krishna says, I will now explain to you knowledge both numinous and phenomenal, by knowing which nothing more will remain to be known. That's how Srila Prabhupada translates it, approximately. Now if we see the words, yajgyatva, by knowing which, na iha, not iha means here, which is usually used in the sense of in this world, bhuya anyat, there will be nothing other, gyatavyam, in this world there's nothing else. If you know this, Krishna says, which I will explain to you, there's nothing else in this world that you need to know. So that's the point. People may be surprised if they say, well, you can know everything by knowing Krishna. Yeah, but you know what you need to know, that's all. How much do you need to know? People go to school, they spend so many years going to school, college, university, all this. It's not necessary. What do we need to know? Now they're forcing everyone has to go to school. In these countries, everyone has to be educated. But so many people are going to work in a factory. Why do they need to have 15 years of going to school to work in a factory or driving a taxi? What do you need to know so many things for? Just a waste of time, money, energy. Actually, the education is just to brainwash you into being a demon, that's all. Into becoming part of their useless society. So they think that, we have to give everyone an education. It's useless. We see so many girls, they get a big education, become PhD and all this kind of thing, and they can't even cook a chapati. It's completely useless. What they're supposed to do, they don't do, and what they're not supposed to do, they're doing. And then they wonder why there are so many problems in society. Why are there problems in society? They think they know better than Krishna. Krishna says, I'll declare unto you everything that you need to know. So, of course, Krishna is speaking philosophy, and he's not speaking culture in this particular point. But that's a given, so to speak. Just like Arjuna, he wanted to give up his dharma. And ultimately Krishna told him to do that, Sarvadhaman Parityaja. But in a different way to that which Arjuna had considered. Krishna wanted him to fight, and Arjuna thought, I'll go off and be in sannyasa. Krishna told him that, who's the real sannyasi? That anashrita karma palam karyam karma karoti yaha sasanyasi cha yogi cha nani ragnena chakriyaha. The one who formally accepts sannyas is not the real sannyasi, but one who performs his dharma as he's prescribed to do. So that doesn't mean that Krishna is thereby desiring to eradicate the system of varnashram. But everyone has to act appropriately. That's the point. Everyone has to act appropriately. So for a sannyasi, he should act as a sannyasi. And for Arjuna on the battlefield, he's there to fight. Then all of a sudden he wants to be a sannyasi. It's ridiculous. That's what Krishna told Arjuna. It's ridiculous. You're just talking what nonsense are you talking? As Krishna said to Arjuna, what are you saying? It doesn't befit you at all. This anarya jushtam. You're just talking like a barbarian, like some kind of someone who doesn't know the. Prabhupada translates that anarya as one who does not know the value of life. So Arjuna, he knows the meaning and the purpose of how to live in this world according to his duty. That's why he's there on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Then all of a sudden he wants to go away and become a sannyasi, become renounced. But what he really wanted to renounce was he wanted to renounce that which he should do. That kind of renunciation, that's not renunciation. That's not proper renunciation. Renunciation means, actual renunciation means to renounce in such a way that the purpose of life is served. But if you renounce because you just don't like what you're doing, that's not proper renunciation. So all these things are taught by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. And the same philosophy, the same understanding is being spoken here by Vritrasura. How did he know? He hadn't heard Bhagavad Gita. How could he know all these things? Because Yomameva samudho janati purushottamam sa sarvavid bhajati mam sarvabhavena bharata. One who worships Krishna, one who has no doubt about Krishna's being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which, although it's not stated it therein by Krishna, it means that one also understands one's own position as not the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the servant of Krishna. So, he knows everything. It means he knows everything that needs to be known. What else needs to be known? There is nothing else that needs to be known. That's all we really need to know. That Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we are his servants. And, yeah, but then this corollary knowledge, which all these other points, just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about detachment, this material world as a place of suffering. So all that knowledge comes for one who knows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhajati mam. Well, actually he's already doing that. One who worships Krishna in all respects, he's already doing that, and he comes to know everything. Everything becomes clear to him just by knowing this principle. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about detachment from this world, equanimity in heat and cold, victory and defeat, which is gloriously exemplified in this vritanta, in this story or episode, in this episode, which is recounted here, of Vritrasura's glorious death. So he showed perfect equanimity. He wasn't attached to winning the battle with Indra. Actually, he did his duty and fought as best he could, but actually in his heart, he wanted to die anyway, because he wanted to get out of that situation and go to Krishna. So, very painful, no doubt, being killed, but he wanted that. So he exhibited great equanimity and non-attachment to victory and the fame and pride that goes with that. So all these points that Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita, they all come from the understanding that I am an eternal servant of Krishna. This material world is miserable. I have no actual connection with it. If one understands this, then automatically he becomes detached. The Mayavadis, they also preach this. And it's true. It's a fact. The material world is miserable. Of course, they don't have the knowledge of one's relationship with Krishna. So they only have part of the equation. They have the most important part is missing. The most important part is to worship Krishna. And in fact, one who worships Krishna with attachment to this material world is better situated than one who cultivates detachment from this material world and not worship of Krishna. Even though one person may seem to be very materialistic, but if they're worshipping Krishna, they're going in the right direction. But if they're not worshipping Krishna, but they're just cultivating detachment, then that ultimately won't help them anyway. Because the real point is to worship Krishna, not simply to become detached from this world. So these are some lessons we can learn by contemplating this verse here today and the purport. Any question about this? Yeah.
Sometimes devotees, they hear that the soul is full of knowledge, and maybe they might think that means he's full of all knowledge. But can you explain how
soul full of knowledge means full to his capacity? You have to know his capacity also. When we say the soul is full of knowledge, that means according to his capacity. If you say a glass is full of water, it doesn't mean that all the water in existence is inside the glass. It means it's full to its capacity. That's all.
Maharaj, sometimes Arjuna was told not to renounce his duty of fighting and do it for the sake of Krishna. But many times devotees will say, well, I'm a doctor or a lawyer or I have some job and that's my duty.
It's my duty, and if I renounce it, then?
Then I'm not doing my duty.
I'm not doing my duty, my dharma. So what do we reply to this? Well, one thing to understand is that first of all, the whole society is not running on dharma anyway. The whole society is way off from the actual position of dharma. But there are some remnants of that, some facets of a dharmic society there. So what is exactly one's duty in modern society? It becomes more difficult to ascertain when from the beginning everyone is in an adharmic situation. So the main duty in this age is to chant Hare Krishna. But still, just like if one is married, we don't recommend that, well, you just give that up. We don't recommend that. The Varnashram Dharma is a material arrangement to regulate society, and at the individual level and at the group level, help people to have a steady mind. Well, first of all, before the steady mind, the necessities of life are provided for. An arrangement is there for that. And peace within society, order within society. So all these help one to have a steady mind and to regulate people's lives so that they contribute to society in a material way, as is required, for everyone should make some contribution, and people should have time and the facility and the training to cultivate spiritual life, or if they're not on the platform of spiritual life, at least religious life. So that traditional varnashram system is broken down. Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish it as well as is possible in the modern age, but that'll have to be understood, that what the principles are, that the principle is to help people advance in Krishna consciousness, or at least come to the platform of Krishna consciousness, or even if not that much, at least save them from grossly sinful life. So that's the purpose, and based on the principle of Harenama, 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 Eva Kevalam Kalo, that in Kali Yuga the holy name is the only way, then, and seeing the traditional usages of Varnashram society, that should be re-established. So if one is a lawyer, then presumably one is married also by this time, by the time you go through all that education to become a lawyer. Of course, in the modern age, you never know. It's so disturbed. They don't get married. They just live with a partner, either of the opposite sex or the same sex, or they marry someone of the same sex, and it's a very disturbed situation, a long way away from dharma. But say if one is in a situation that would have until recently been considered normal. I don't know what normal is now. But the general direction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is there, that nama shroi kari jatane tumi takaha aponakaji. You take shelter of the holy name and remain performing whatever work you're doing. So that's the general principle, because often people think, well, now I'm taking to Krishna consciousness, so I have to just give up everything, change my life. But the general recommendation is what you're doing, you continue in that, but take shelter of the holy name. But that's the general principle I'm speaking. It's too big a topic to dilate on at great length right now. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.